Author Chuck Klosterman argues there is a problem with understanding history. The people who decide what a certain era means are not the people who experienced it, which would seem to warp our understanding. His book is called But What If We're Wrong? Thinking About the Present as If It Were the Past. Klosterman says future people are going to reinterpret our time now to explain what they want the past to be. He wonders if everything we think is important and relevant now is going to become meaningless.
Well, like when I talk about rock music, for example, what I'm basically saying is that it feels like rock is receding from the culture. Okay, and that doesn't mean it's going to become extinct, but it's going to move out of the center of the culture where it was for like the last half of the 20th century. Now, if that continues to occur in, say, 200 years, rock music will be essentially an academic pursuit. It'll be something that people will have to be taught to understand and feel. It won't just be part of life. So it'll be sort of like marching music, right? Now, when we talk about marching music now, everyone knows who it is. But if we go on the street and ask someone to name a composer, they'll either name no one or one person, John Philip Sousa. He is now interchangeable with marching music. He is the idea. So apply this to rock. If we get to a point where rock music is an academic pursuit, it will probably be explained through the identity of one artist. Okay, so who will that artist be? Well, my natural inclination, and in a rational world, the answer is the Beatles.
But maybe Elvis.
But we don't live in the rational world. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. So you have to think, well, what are other ways this could unspool? What are ways that someone could become the definition of rock music outside of just the idea of merit? Because merit is not the answer to these questions.
You use examples from science, metaphysics, and pop culture, examples of things we know are true. We understand gravity. Our lives are really happening right now. The U.S. Constitution is good for us. Football is too violent, on and on. And you show how we could be wrong. Why does it matter that we could be wrong?
Well, I mean, that is a difficult question to answer because does it matter? Okay. Does it matter that our view of the 1400s, let's say we're totally wrong about how we view that period of time. What is the consequence of that? Well, in some ways, the answer is none. Okay, there's no utility to this book. Even if I'm correct about the way we may misinterpret the present and that people in 500 years will remember this time differently, it won't really impact our lives now. And the fact that they may misinterpret or confuse what this time was like won't really even damage them. Okay, in a way, the future is a neutral charge. It will be different. But it doesn't really matter if we're right or wrong about it. The certitude we have about reality is almost certainly going to be wrong because the history of ideas is the history of people being wrong.
Here's an example that's not in your book, but your book reminded me of, first of all, how wrong a lot of people have been about Donald Trump. How do you view him with your open-mindedness about your own opinions?
Well, okay, you look at the trajectory of his political experience here. We were constantly saying, this is not going to work. I remember talking to people way back at last Thanksgiving. It's like, you know, at what point will he no longer lead the GOP polls even? The idea of him winning the nomination didn't even seem plausible. So it was just sort of this is impossible. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Then suddenly he is the nominee. And a lot of the same people who were talking about how this was impossible immediately hit the panic button. And they're like, this is going to destroy democracy. Now, that said, I don't know if it's mathematically possible for him to win this election. It doesn't appear that it is. But let's say that he does. I do think it's possible that Trump might just be a bad president in the traditional way presidents are bad. Like, it might not be this cataclysmic thing. He might be so ineffective that it's almost not damaging. It's a strange thing. That's almost an optimistic view to hold.
You left me with an interesting idea. Basically, you said storytelling is everything and storytelling is the problem.
Yes.
What could I do with that?
Well, pretty much all of Western society is built around this idea that we understand information through narrative, okay, where it's built into our mind as children through where we were kind of relayed stories. But there's also evidence that biologically that's just how our brain works, that the way we are as a mammal is set up to understand the world through the rudimentary style of storytelling, that there usually is a character and that the character has conflict and that this conflict plays out in a way with a resolution, all of these things. It's how we understand news. It's how we understand history. But in a sense, that is at odds with reality, because reality doesn't necessarily work in that kind of linear structured function. So we're constantly understanding the world through the idea of this is how the story kind of unspools itself, but the world isn't really a story like that. It involves ancillary, unconnected things that sort of contradict the logic of the story. So we're forcing the logic upon it. I mean, maybe that's the easiest way to describe it. Storytelling forces people to jam logic into situations where logic does not exist. Here's another way to describe it. Okay. In this book, I talk about Moby Dick. Okay. Very early in the book, I discuss how, and that was one of the reasons I got interested in writing this book at all. I was reading about Moby Dick. I have to admit, I wasn't reading Moby Dick, but I was reading about it.
That's a lot of us.
Yeah. So Herman Melville writes Moby Dick and he thinks, this is my masterwork. This is like my, you know, this is what I've built my whole career toward. He was a successful commercial author, but, you know, not famous. The book comes out, gets mixed reviews, doesn't sell that well, ruins his career, he becomes an alcoholic, dies. Okay. Many years later, after World War I, he's been dead for a long time, the book is rediscovered. And it's not just rediscovered to be like, oh, this is a good book. It's like the book. This is the great American novel. If you're an American novelist, this is your aspiration. So we have to explain why that happened. Okay. So the explanation becomes, well, okay, a lot of guys were coming back from World War I and they were fighting this amorphous, faceless German enemy. It's kind of like fighting a faceless, you know, anonymous whale. And there was a brotherhood among soldiers, much like there's a brotherhood among guys on a whaling ship. And, you know, Moby Dick has these long passages with, like, arcane knowledge, how to make rope and all these things. Very much like if you go to war, you have to learn how to operate your rifle, you know, learn all these obscure kind of facts that are dependent on your life. These are the reasons, they would argue, that this book was suddenly seen as real important. It resonated with those people. And yet, there are many books that could have fulfilled this role. This is the one we just sort of capriciously or arbitrarily selected. That doesn't mean it's not great. It is great. But it didn't have to be this book. It just worked out that way. But we have to reverse engineer that explanation. Okay? We have to apply reasonable storytelling and logic to how this got selected, because it's very difficult to admit it just got selected. And the main thing that makes something popular is a degree of pre-existing popularity. It perpetuates itself. But we don't want to think about the world like that. Like, it's awkward to think that chance is the main reason history comes as it is. But that's what it is.
So if we're storytelling animals and the story basically can't match reality, it sounds like we are condemned to be wrong.
We are. I mean, every generation of people is, to a degree, condemned to be wrong. Like, it's always going to be that way because we're making up reality as we go, which means we can also make up the past. You know, somebody once said, it was actually Joe Walsh of the Eagles who said this. He was like, well, you know, you look at your life and it seems totally chaotic. And just it's happening by chance. But you look back on your life, it seems like a perfectly knit novel. Well, we're doing that all the time with everything. We're looking back and then deciding it makes sense. And people are going to do that to us too. Like, someone in the future will look back at Trump and they will give a real reasonable explanation to as how this happened. And yet there is no reasonable explanation to how this happened. There are just lots of interesting guesses.
With lots of interesting guesses, there's Chuck Klosterman with his new book, But What If We're Wrong, Thinking About the Present as If It Were the Past? I asked him how the world would change if we all read his book and believed him, and he said the result would be more humility and wonder. This is The Record on KUOW Seattle.